Hi, and welcome to this week's BA Brew. I'm Kerry.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Mick.
And today we're going to be talking about bees and beekeeping, which you might think is a very strange subject to learn for professionals, but honestly, keep listening and it's going to be a very, very interesting conversation. So let's kick off with what can we learn from bees? So Mick, you're the beekeeper. Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, well, I think Mike keeps bees as well, but I'm Mick. I'm an avid beekeeper. Yeah, I would say that's correct. What can we learn from bees? Well, I didn't think that before I started beekeeping, I didn't think there would be anything we could learn from bees, to be honest. But I remember being at a hive one day, and in beekeeping, sort of like from a BA perspective, is I keep records for every single hive, right? So every time I go and do an inspection, I keep records of what happened so that when I come back the next time, I've got a good understanding. So it's almost like you're doing a bit of, like, I don't know, gathering some requirements and stuff. And I went there one day and the hive was absolutely fine. And the next week when I went back thinking, oh yeah, everything's going to be great when I open this hive up, I took the lid off, and instead of being a nice, calm group, they jumped out of the hive, and it's like they're trying to kill me and trying to sting me to death. And I was just stood there thinking, I wonder what's happened in between the time of me being here last week compared to what's happened this week. And I think a little bit, that's like what happens in teams of people. So if you're working in change, or if you're doing some sort of BA stuff, we have some sort of interactions with teams, but I wouldn't say we're in there constantly with the team. And I think we can find this. We can come back into a team environment one week to the next. You think everything's fine. And it's the things that are going on in between the sort of invisible times that we're not there, that we don't see. And then you have to really try to get under the skin of what's going on. So from a beekeeping perspective, it could be a multitude of things. They might not have enough forage. The queen might not be giving enough pheromones off. They may not be producing any honey. They may have... the queen might not be laying enough eggs. So all these type of things, you then have to investigate and find out. So the jobs we do, I think, are a lot of sort of trying to get under the skin and doing this investigation bit and find out actually what's going on. And it just hit me when I was at the hive and I thought, oh yeah, this is sort of what goes on at work in my job. So yeah, that's the first time I thought, there's some sort of link here.
And yeah. Mike, did you have anything?
Yeah, I used to describe myself as a beekeeper, but having met loads of other more proficient beekeepers, I tend to describe myself as a honey stealer. So I do, and just to make it clear, I do have my own hives. I'm not going to other people's hives for taking their honey. But yeah, I'm not as hands-on and as perhaps Mick is. But there have been lots of things I think I've found from beekeeping. I mean, the first thing is, one of the biggest lessons I've had is that turning up at the hive unannounced and just going and taking the lid off the hive without preparing the bees was not a good idea. So I thought one time, I'm only just going to have a little look in the top of the hive just to check it's okay. I can't remember what I was doing. I might have just been taking an empty super away, and I didn't smoke the hive. And you're supposed to smoke the hive to just calm the bees down. I had all my bee suit on, but because I hadn't smoked them, the bees were following me. So it took me about 5 minutes to do whatever checking I wanted to do. And then I spent half an hour running up and down the road trying to lose these bees before I got into the car to go home. So fortunately, that served me quite well, because I learned the lesson. I need to smoke the bees. And I particularly need to smoke the bees because I don't run quite as fast as they fly now. So they're able to keep up with me. But seriously, there have been loads of things. So just thinking about the different roles there are in the hive, the different stakeholders, if you like, in the hive, and how the things that they do, how you have to think about what those different stakeholders' needs are. It's been quite interesting, actually, how drawing parallels between things that are going on in the hive and in teams. Fortunately, I haven't been in the experience where teams have wanted to kill me. That's I am a bit concerned for you, Mick, if that's some of the stuff you've had to experience. But there have definitely been environments where I've gone into a team meeting and thought, yeah, something has changed here that I wasn't aware of because I wasn't there all the time. And yeah, I can relate to that, Mick.
Yeah, it's what you said about the stakeholders is interesting, Mick, because I think a lot of people think the queen sort of is in charge or leads the hive, if you like. So, you know, for people that might not know, you know, there's in most of the time in a hive, there is one queen. There's in the height of summer, if you've got a strong colony, there's like 50,000 worker bees. And then there's probably about 500 what are called drone bees, which are the male bees. And to be honest, it's not the queen that sort of leads the hive. It's actually the worker bees. And all the worker bees are actually female as well. So if you've ever seen Bee Movie by Disney, that is an actually correct, factually incorrect representation, because it's all the men that go out collecting the pollen and nectar, and that's not true. But even when you take a worker bee as well, and when you look at if you take a worker bee from sort of a continuous learning perspective, I think, again, most people think a worker bee just is born into the hive and then they're out foraging for food and stuff like that. And that's not what actually happens. A worker bee in the summer can live for about 6 weeks, but they do about 7 different jobs in that period of time. So again, if you take that from the people we work with, people could be doing lots of different things throughout a period of time. You might be working with them as a BA or a change person. So a worker bee, for instance, when it's first born, its job is to sort of clean out the hive. Then it goes on to cleaning the larvae. Then it becomes, it makes wax, which is, I mean, that's a podcast in itself, which has blown people's minds off how bees make wax, because they actually make it themselves. And then they go on to like becoming guard bees. And then it's only in the final period of time of their life is where they go and collect pollen and nectar. So again, if we're people going into working with teams and we don't know what the role is people are doing in there, and we have assumptions before we turn up, I think you can get yourself into a bit of a sticky situation. So that's where, you know, understanding the team is really important. So, you're not giving someone a job or a role, or you're asking them information on something that they probably don't know anything about. So, yeah, it's that part of even understanding the worker bees is relevant to understanding a team of people.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting sort of listening to it and how they actually work, because I had kind of no idea that this kind of went on in the beehive. I just thought bees go into the hive, make honey, and voila, I have it on my breakfast every morning. You know, it's obviously much more complicated. It's interesting that we can link it to sort of the business environment as well. So thank you for that. So what would you say are some sort of the key benefits that we could learn from the beehive?
My main role in this is to add in the bee-related puns. I'm glad you got a sticky in there at one point there, Mick. But my job is to wax lyrical, and I'm going to stop there for a moment whilst I think of some other things in there. I think communication is quite an interesting one. So bees, you don't tend to think of bees, well, unless you watch the Bee Movie, you don't tend to think of bees having a conversation, and they don't chatter in the same way, but they have some very sophisticated ways of communicating, which Mick, I'm sure, can expand upon. But they're also very aware of what's going on in the hive, and they can respond very quickly to a change. So when the reason why the smoker is used to calm the bees down is because they think that there's a risk of a fire. So if they detect the smoke, some of the bees are then thinking we might need to evacuate the hive. So they ignore this person in a big white suit coming towards them because they've got something much more important to deal with. It's some of those communication things. There's things like the waggle dance, the use of pheromones, etc., which I'm going to pass over to Mick at this point, because I'm sure Mick has got way more interesting things to say about that.
No, it's the way they do sense making, I suppose, is very, you know, it's interesting. You think in a hive, because when most people see honeybees, it's when a hive's open. But you think most of the time it's pitch black. It is pitch black in a hive. And they do all the, a lot of their communication is through dances that they do. So they'll come back and they will do something called a waggle dance. And this was found out by a guy called Carl von Frisch, his name was. He got a Nobel Prize for it. So they will literally, a bee will come back into the hive and they'll do this waggle dance. And this waggle dance is telling the rest of the bees in the hive the distance they need to fly from the hive at the angle to the sun when they leave the hive, and they will find some sort of source of pollen, nectar, propolis, water. So they, again, when this, they're very good at doing that. And it just shows, again, in whatever role we're doing, that the fact that we have to be very good at communicating is like so important. The one, the really interesting that bees will do as well is they will not over optimize for the situation they're in. So what I mean by that is, you think in a hive of bees, they travel, I think, in a day, something like combined total about 90,000 miles. That's how far they'll fly. And when they go out, if a bee comes back and passes this communication signal on, yes, go here and you will find some nectar. They only about 80% of the hive go and collect the nectar. The other 20% of the bees that receive that communication just completely ignore it. Because what they're doing is they're going to find the next nectar source. So they have a very sophisticated way of exploit trade-off. They will only exploit 80% of what they find, and 20% of the hive is going off to find the next thing. And I think sometimes in teams and in when we're working, humans are very good at trying to over-exploit what we know or the knowledge we have. And that's where sometimes I think if we gave people the 20%, this is where the experimentation and the finding the next thing that's going to work in a pilot you're doing or something like that comes in. If you don't give people that 20% and we all over-exploit, we just sort of grind to a halt. And for bees, that's absolutely, if they over-exploit, the hive will die. So they have a very sophisticated way of knowing that they can't do that. And I think that's something we can learn from how they go about doing that.
I hadn't really thought about that before, but it really links into lean waste, really, doesn't it? That you, if you've got everybody going out to get the nectar and the pollen from one area, then when that's run out, there's a lot of workers sitting around not having anything to do. So by having some of the bees going and discovering the next source, you're keeping all of that team busy. Sorry, that wasn't meant to be a pun there, but I'll keep it in anyway. But you're keeping the whole team busy, so you're not wasting the resources that you've got, and you're building up the right sort of inventory as well. So whatever you need in the hive, so the right mix of pollen and nectar, to keep the queen nourished, have enough food there for the grubs, etc.
They have when they use these waggle dances for lots of different things, but one of the things they have to do as well is for when they swarm. So I'm sure some people have seen swarms of bees. It's absolutely amazing when they actually do swarm. It's quite, when you first see it, it's very noisy. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm in a dangerous position here. Actually, the fact is when they're doing that, it's the time you will probably least ever get stuck. You could stand in the middle of them with a pair of shorts on and they wouldn't care, because they're trying to find a new home. But the way they come to the decision about where they're going to swarm to is amazing, because they use like a quorum-based decision-making process. So what happens is they send lots of scout bees out. So again, think about this in from a BA or a change or a team perspective. They're always trying to find the next thing. So they purposely send lots of people out to do that. So they send scout bees out. And what happens, these scout bees find different areas where they're going to potentially take up a new home. And they'll come back and they'll all do their dances. And over a period of time, they'll get to what's called a quorum. So it's a number of bees that are copying the dance that other bees are doing. And when they reach this quorum threshold and they've got enough bees, they will leave. They don't go to the point of consensus. They don't, not every bee has to agree with the other bee that they're going to swarm, because they'll take too long to make a decision. And I think this is, it's an interesting thing where it's like Colin Powell, who used to be a general in the US military, had this thing. He would always make a decision when he thought he had 70% of the information, because if you wait any longer than that, things have moved on so much, the 100% decision you think you're going to make is out of date and it's pointless. So those things tie together as well. I think sometimes we can be sort of guilty of this. Everyone's got to agree before we make a decision, and we end up in a bit of paralysis, or we can end up in a bit of paralysis, and bees don't really suffer from that.
Yeah, so how, like saying, ask for forgiveness rather than asking for permission. It's almost that kind of thing, isn't it? Keep everything going. That's really been really interesting. Any final thoughts from you to finish the podcast on, Mick? Have you got anything else you'd like to share with us?
Only one thing, and that is whatever discipline you do and stuff, I would say it's always worth trying to take risks in things. I think sometimes we don't take enough risks. And why am I linking that back to beekeeping? The reason I'm linking that back to beekeeping is because I'm allergic to bees, because that's an EpiPen, right?
Oh,
okay. That's taking quite a risk then. Okay.
But it's because I enjoy it an awful lot. Yes, I'm taking risks, but I'm also mitigating those risks, because actually I'm almost at the end of my 3-year course of immunotherapy, where I've been having microdoses of bee venom. So actually I'm at the point now where I'm not allergic to bees anymore. So that's what I'm saying about, I've been prepared to take a risk to continue like working in this team. All right. Because I do feel like I'm part of a team when I beekeep in. That's what it feels like to me. I've been prepared to take that risk to sort of keep the team going. So yeah, always take risks, I would say.
How can I follow that? I don't think I'm allergic to bee venom, and I hope I don't become allergic to bee venom, because I'm enough of a coward anyway to then add that additional risk. But it does sound like you are managing that risk well. So
exactly.
Anybody out there who is allergic to bees and is thinking of taking up beekeeping, don't just rush into it. Make sure you your EpiPen. So it is quite a, I was quite shocked then, Mick. So and it's kind of it's not very often I'm lost for words, but I'm kind of feeling that a little bit now. I was trying to draw some other parallels with business analysis, and the one thing that I failed to do a successful link with was cost benefit analysis. Certainly tangible cost benefit analysis, because I think if I started applying the full cost benefit analysis of beekeeping financially, I don't think it would stack up for me. But the intangibles, the joy of the job, the fact that you're keeping those bees going, the joy of people actually sampling the honey and saying, oh yeah, that's really nice, that's much better than the supermarket honey, which is effectively just sugar. There's loads of really good things. The other thing I'd say is whatever your interests and whatever your hobbies are, there may be stories in those hobbies that can help you explain some of the concepts of business analysis and business change to other people. So look to what things you enjoy and see if you can find some links. And I think that's enough from me. And I don't think I got enough bee related puns in, did I?
Come on, Mike. Can you do one more for us?
One more. I can't do it to order. I'm not a hive of all knowledge, you know.
Well, like you said, man, I think that story I told you was the sting of the tail.
Yeah,
brilliant. Right, thank you to Mike and Mick for this really interesting brew, and thank you for watching and listening. And if anybody has any ideas for any future podcasts, please do get in contact with us at babrew@siskd.com, and don't forget to like, share and subscribe.